The double play pass gets you one ticket each to Speech and Debate and Cocktails at Pam's, two hilarious plays this fall at Studio 1398 on Granville Island. See both shows for just $25. Double play passes are on sale now until August 31st. Visit facebook.com/20somethingtheater to buy a pass and learn more.
Conservation is the first and best resource option for BC. Do your part. Turn off the lights when you leave a room and unplug your cell phone charger when charging is complete. Visit bchydro.com to find out more ways you can make a difference. This message brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
You're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and it is Friday at 1 o'clock here in beautiful Vancouver, and it is time for Scald's Hull. I am your host, Brian McDonald, and coming up in a couple of days, it will be September. September is a very busy time of year for campus and campus radio stations, and just a quick announcement, because of that, my show on Friday, September 6th and Friday, September 13th has been preempted for other programming, so you might want to take a listen into that. We haven't gone away, though. We will return, as usual, starting from Friday, September 20th. Now, because of that, today's show is chock full of really wonderful stuff, so let's just get started right away. You are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and this is Scald's Hull. We are here with our next guest, Sarah Vicarac. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. How are you doing today?
Good, yep.
So tell us a little bit about yourself to get started.
I am, well, now I'm in Vancouver, but originally I am a actress, also a singer-songwriter, coming out of Edmonton, and I've been in Vancouver for about the last, it's 2 years in September.
What is it that you do?
I act in my own works. I also act in other people's things, as well as I write music and play music, guitar, acoustic guitar and singing, for sure.
And that's why you're here today, aren't you? You're involved with the Vancouver Fringe Festival?
Yes. The show that I am doing is called Aletheia, and it's a Greek word that means truth. And the play is about heroism. And so I'm looking at seven different characters, and they're ranging from heroes like Gandhi or Mother Teresa, and then going to look at everyday people like a mom getting her kids out of an abusive situation, or just a five-year-old. I'm just toying around with the idea, what makes a hero, and is it bravery, is it truth, those kinds of things.
That sounds like a really fascinating play. Where did it come from?
I wrote it, and this is the third incarnation of it. And so from the first to the second showing, I rewrote a lot of it, and I took it to the Edmonton Fringe, and I got 4 stars from 3 different papers, so that's 4 out of 5 stars, really good. And then now, coming last summer from the Edmonton Fringe here again to Vancouver, I've just been doing even more rewriting and working with the director and just trying to hone the project, even making it even greater than it was before.
Well, let's take a step back a bit. Where was the inspiration for this particular piece from in your life?
When I moved out to Vancouver, I was coming out of a situation in Edmonton. My family is still there, who I love very much, but I needed to get away from what I was doing. I was in a questioning period of whether to continue acting or not, and so I chose to continue acting, and that was my journey out here. But it was leaving behind another part of my life that, well, I was kind of closing the door on. Yeah, I was leaving behind a part of my life that I was closing the door on. And so here I was taking this big step and redefining for myself what my life is going to be, what it means to follow your dreams, and ultimately, like, what is it to be heroic for yourself? And making a hard choice in the face of other people not agreeing with you. And that led me to write this play, which is a conglomeration of a whole bunch of different situations of people making decisions based on personal truth.
Before you started writing this particular play, did you have a background in being a playwright or an actor?
I'd been an actress, like I've acted since I was five, as people would say, but I then went to school, Grant McEwen in Edmonton, for 2 years. And in terms of writing plays, I had written a 5 or 10 minute kids show before, but I'd never written my own material, really, but I had been acting and creating. Actually, I lie. I had written a lot, now that I think about it. I've done The Fringe for about, which is where the show is being performed, in the Vancouver Fringe, but I'd done The Fringe for the past 5 summers before this, and with a group in Edmonton, we had created 3 different shows. And it wasn't me solely writing it, but yeah, I have written before. But this was the first project that's just my own project, and it's writing intensive. It's a lot of dialogue, whereas before it was a lot of improvised script.
You've hinted that you have quite a history of working with the Fringe festivals here and in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. How did that get started for you?
In Grant McEwen in Edmonton, we're quite encouraged to create our own stuff. And so the Edmonton Fringe, which is, you know, arguably the second biggest in the world, but for sure the biggest in North America. It's a great breeding ground in Edmonton for young artists. And so I grew up in a culture in Edmonton of people doing the Fringe. So it was very achievable for me to think, oh, doing the Fringe. And right when I got out of college, someone had asked me to be in their Fringe show. So it started there. And then the next summer, with my friends, we wanted to do our own Fringe show, you know, and so it's escalated from there. Now we've toured Winnipeg, Saskatoon, Edmonton, Vancouver, Victoria, and I've done some shows in Cranbrook on our own, but that's been my Fringe circuit.
And are you here in Vancouver just for the Fringe then?
No, I'm living in Vancouver now. Yeah, I moved here 2 years ago, so.
Oh, what brought you here?
I wanted to continue my studying in acting and study with the gentleman who's directing the play. His name is Scott Swan, and he has a small studio in West Vancouver called Seacoast Studios, or Seacoast Theatre Center. And I'd worked with him in Edmonton before and really just appreciated the work that he got out of me and how he directed me, and so I wanted to continue studying with him. So I came out to transition into film, continue doing theater, but to also broaden my horizons into film as well.
And that's a very interesting journey, and it's one that many of our listeners potentially will go on.
Yeah.
What has that been like for you so far?
At first, I came out and it was hard because I didn't know anybody, and then Vancouver is a hard place to meet people and make friends. And in fact, most of my friends in Vancouver right now are from Edmonton or from Ontario, funnily enough. So I came out here, and luckily I had family that was here, so I had a bit of a support system, but basically you're redefining your life, which in Alethea, the characters are also doing the same. They're at the crux of, they've made this decision. And if the play were to continue, you'd see the characters doing what I did when I came to Vancouver, redefining your life now that you've made a huge change or a big decision. So making new friends, finding a job, which was terribly difficult. Nobody wants to hire somebody that's just moved to the city because they might leave again. But thankfully, I had really a good family support system out here.
Mm. Tell us a little bit about where and when it's going to be.
For sure. So the Vancouver Fringe Festival is taking place September 5th through the 15th. So it's coming up pretty quick here. And there are lots of shows. So you should go online to, I think it's www.vancouverfringe.com, and you can check out a whole bunch of shows. My show is playing at Studio 16, which is on 1545 West 7th Ave, and that's basically Granville and 7th Ave. And it's Studio 16 is the Francophone venue in town. And I've got 6 shows. They're at many different times throughout the festival, but you can go to my website, which is www.saravickruck.ca, and there will be links to buy tickets to it there. My very first show, if you want to come help me pack out my house, is going to be on September 6th at 7 p.m., and I'm hoping to just pack that house out. So
yes, and so we'll do our best to do that. It sounds like it's going to be a really awesome, awesome opportunity. And don't worry if you didn't get those particular numbers. We'll share links to your website and links to the Vancouver Fringe Festival on Scald's Hall social media feeds. We have a Twitter account. We have a Facebook account. We're a little bit easier to find. Scald's Hall. Just go to the CITR website, go to my show, and it's in the feeds. And we'll include links to all of that.
beautiful. Thank you.
Yes. This is a new beginning for a lot of people, this particular time of year. Do you have any advice for up-and-coming actors that are thinking of following in your footsteps?
Yeah, for sure. I actually think about this quite often because I wonder what piece of advice would I want to hear from somebody. And I think a big one that's really been speaking to me lately is that just as it's always said by other people, do what you love, but don't compare yourself to other people. Everybody has their own unique story, and everybody's journey to becoming an artist is going to be slightly different than everybody else's. So while you can take inspiration from somebody else's fantastic career, know that yours is going to be different. And as long as you continue to do what you love, as long as you are doing what you love and have faith that the future is going to work out for you, then you're on the right path. Just love your life. And don't forget to take... this is the longest piece of advice people are going to ever get, but don't forget to take time just to live your life where you are. Because I, for a long time, used to think, oh, I'm going to work really hard at acting, and I'm going to work really hard at this now, and I would let things in my life slide, like my friends and my family. But now, being away from my family especially, I just have made myself pause and take time and make sure that I'm living the life that I want to lead now and always. So not waiting to, quote-unquote, be famous and then I'll have time for everybody else in my life, but just the people that I want to go along the journey with me, I better pick them up and take them along now. Otherwise, they're missing the entire journey. So, online, I think it was on Huffington Post or something, there was a blog entry by some casting director and said, you know, 10 things to do when you're not actually acting. And one of them was, go live your life. Actors are boring. Because they do. They spend so much time just trying to be an actor, they forget to be a person.
I wanted to ask a little bit about other upcoming projects that either you're involved in or that you want to be involved in.
I am going to be involved in October with All In, which is a play that is being put on by Frank Theatre Company. And it's a play about belonging. And it talks about gender stereotypes and just many and cultural differences and being inclusive of everybody. It's a really great show. I'm involved in that. I'm also in another fringe show, which is titled Fractured. It's at the same venue, Studio 16. You can also get links from my website as well. And it's a play about a high school shooting. And so there's 9 students, and we are reliving our lives and talking about picking up the pieces after this high school shooting has happened. And just, we're going all over the map with topics as to why it happened. No real answers, because there aren't any real answers or solid conclusions, but just a hopeful message about coming together to get over a tragedy like this and raising, hopefully, questions that the audience will leave discussing among themselves. So that's another great show. And other than that, I am just working on my music, which, again, you can check out at my website. And I'm playing gigs around the city whenever I can get one. I want to have an album out by next June. So,
what's the name of the band you go with?
It's just me right now, although I am looking for a fiddle player. So if anybody feels like they want to play fiddle, and a drummer, of course. My music is quite indie, folk, little bit bluegrass. So I'm looking for somebody to come and join me on the fiddle and do some harmonies.
Oh, you're on the wrong coast.
I know, hey?
If you were in Nova Scotia, I could point you in the direction of several fiddlers.
Yeah, I have family in Nova Scotia as well, so yeah.
But I'm sure there must be somebody out here who can play the fiddle and do folk music. It might not be Celtic folk music, but there's got to be somebody out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Well, good luck with all of that.
Thank you, and thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's been a complete pleasure.
Cool.
And you've been listening to Sarah Vicarek, and this is Skull's Hall at CITR 101.9 FM. You're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are here with our two very next very special guests, John and Dana.
Hi!
Hello!
Thank you for having us.
Hello, British Columbia.
Hello. Maybe we could start off by learning a little bit about who you guys are.
Ladies first.
Oh. Okay, I'll make mine brief. Third generation California girl. Always loved singing. Terrible at math, but I loved to write. Loved to write stories. Lots of rock and roll bands. Always a singer. Always a torch singer. Rock and roll, blues. That's my love. But I love to write stories. So that's pretty much my background. As far as, I've always been involved, I've always been in bands, I've toured. I do a lot of session work still, but I'm producing my own stuff now. So I have a CD coming out pretty soon. Well, I think I've got about 11 songs. I have to really strip it down. But I'm also writing some theme songs for some of our series, and I've got a really badass one for suspense that I can't wait for John to hear. Woo-hoo! And John and I met by chance, and we felt like we were brother and sister from a past life because we can finish each other's sentences, and we love the same era of radio, and we love to be spooked and use our imagination. So that's my story, and I will stick to it, Brian.
And as for me, I was born and raised in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I grew up, I think Dana and I ended up watching a lot of the same shows as the Academy.
Yeah.
I was always a huge fan of The Twilight Zone, The Outer Limits, Thriller, Night Gallery.
And you laughed all through Donna Reed like I did, Leave It to Beaver. You just always wanted something dark to happen, right?
Yes, yes. And it never did.
No!
But it's funny that we ended up doing this because as a little boy, I would sneak a little transistor radio into bed and listen to CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And now we're basically doing the same sort of thing. So it's sort of full circle.
Here on our show on Skulls Hall, we've actually played episodes of the original Suspense in the past.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Weren't they fantastic with those actors? I mean, top notch.
Yes, they were amazing. How did you guys decide to bring that back to life?
We had actually done an anthology, radio anthology previous to that. And
signed a bad contract, couldn't do anything for 2 years.
Yeah.
We won't say their name, though.
Yeah, we don't want to give them any publicity. You know, it suddenly dawned on us that we had all these scripts
great,
written already.
Yeah, and great stories.
And there's so much great literature from the pulp era, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s.
Lovecraft, gosh,
Robert E. Howard.
Right.
And so, yeah, I was already listening to Suspense and sort of threw it out there that the original series has been in the public domain for like a million years now. So we decided to revive it, but give it our own twist. So,
and the actors we have are, one of them started out in radio, and you hear him everywhere you go here. Disneyland, that's his voice. And he's everywhere, and he's the most humble man you'd ever meet. And he's recognized it. And he doesn't act like a star. None of our stars act like stars.
No.
We're so lucky. We have the nicest crew of really, you know, top-notch actors that could all be doing something else, yet they have sort of a feeling that it's special. It's special for them because they get to really act. It's so different than just, you know, when you're on camera, you raise an eyebrow and you're telling a story. On the radio, you really have to show it with your voice.
One of my favorite authors from that era is actually Clark Ashton Smith, who was
a
contemporary of Howard's and Lovecraft's, and I really like his stuff. What exactly do you guys do on the show?
We both write it. Well, John does the adaptations. I will not touch them because, I mean, just his bridging narration in the beginning of stuff that we write, he's just the poet. I have stories. I'm like the idea person. But when he says, oh, I've got this idea for adaptation, that means, oh, Dana has 2 days to take a holiday. You know, because, I mean, I'll throw in my 2 cents worth. But we'll just sit, our favorite thing is to eat cereal, and we can usually knock out a script in about 2 days. What scares us or what we decide what isn't on Schiller or sci-fi. Hey, you know, let's not overdo the vampires. And one more zombie movie, I will go ballistic, you know. And we just write stories, but we're like 8-year-olds anyway. So we're always telling each other lies and fiction. What do we call them? fiction fibs.
Fiction fibs.
Guess what happened? And we just love to do it.
Yeah. I mean, we try to do everything ourselves. I mean, we do the writing, the editing, the music,
everything, absolutely.
I will throw out there though that we've
artwork, Danny.
Dennis
our cover
art is doing a fellow named Dennis Hager's doing our artwork for our upcoming Audible releases, and wow, we're so lucky to have him.
It was jaw droppingly. It's eerie, but it's so perfect. Oh, I'm dazzled.
Yeah, we hold it up and show it to you, but, you know.
Yeah.
And then it loses something.
What is the recording process like?
Fun, short, they're all pros. three takes. Some of the girls come in if they have somewhere else to go. They come in, just do their part. They're done. Everybody is a pro. And sometimes we'll change things midstream, too. If something isn't working, everybody just goes with it. But we're out of there within 2-3 hours, 4 hours max, if we try to squeeze things in we didn't get last time, or I want to try some music or whatnot. But it's very easy. I mean, just the, I guess our biggest challenge was everybody has to turn the page at the same time. So editing is easier.
Yeah, we go in, usually start at noon. We're generally done by 2:15, 2:30. I would do a couple of takes each scene. And then from that point, it's just finding which takes we like the best.
Yep.
And putting those together and throwing sound effects in the background. And
transitional music.
And
thank you, GarageBand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're pressed from recording to final edit, we can probably do one in a week and a half.
What is your post-production process like?
It's so easy, really, because it's just the two of us. So,
yeah. I mean, we
get the finished product, and then John has been just sending these demos to everybody, and we were fortunate enough to get so many bites. You know, we feel blessed because we really had a hard 2 years having to wait out this other contract and feeling kind of disappointed and disillusioned, because I think that radio, people don't use their imagination. They need to, and this is what's going to be so new and exciting. We have a lot of colleges that these kids dig it. They absolutely dig it because it's fun.
When I first started the show, one of the first things that we had was a production that was co-produced by our creative writing department and our theater department here at UBC, where they got together and they wrote 10 radio drama scripts and produced 4 of them. And that was
Ooh,
a very
nice.
Yeah.
Yay!
Are they available anywhere?
Yes.
I'm always looking for something new to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have podcasts of them, and I will send you links later. They were
thank
done,
you.
Yeah,
well, thank
they were done on our show called It Ain't Easy Being Green, which is the show just before mine.
Oh! Yeah.
They're very, very, very interesting. And we had a lot of people from the community come in and do them. We actually did them the old-fashioned way. They were done live.
I imagine like someone like Damon can do it because he has the practice. But in the old days, that's what they did.
Yeah.
You know?
And if there was a flub, you just lived with it. I mean,
well, we used to do our other series live and holding the scripts. But to be honest, unless it's like I'm watching someone like Tom Hanks or Tucker Smallwood, I really don't care to see a reading. I don't want to see a dang script in somebody's hand. So I don't like that idea. I was dazzled and delighted when John said, let's just do straight up radio. Because you lose something. You know, I really want people just to feel the music, because we put a lot into the music. We put a lot into our stories. So we want someone just to close their eyes and forget about their world for a while and get scared. And
you had mentioned Clark Ashton Smith earlier, and we actually did The Return of the Sorcerer, which I think I think is one of the ones.
Yes, it is. Yes.
And, you know, I think we stayed pretty close to the original story. Certainly a little closer than the Vincent Price Night Gallery episode.
Oh!
which I love Vincent Price, but yeah, it veered off course a little bit.
I was looking at him. Do you write as well, Brian?
Occasionally.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm actually, for a graduate project I'm working on, I'm turning an autoethnographic report, which is something, it's basically my experience of trying to become an actor, and I'm turning that into a dramatized production.
It works, right?
Yeah. Which is, it's not ready yet. I'm actually doing it for credit for my graduate studies. But when it's done, it's going to be a dramatization of someone who was a teacher for his entire career, turning things around and trying to learn about performance and what that means for him personally and professionally. And it's based on what I really did. But it's
fun, though. You have to laugh a lot. That's what I'm thinking, because I'm just learning acting, too. And it's hysterically funny, because sometimes it's so easy, and other times you think, how do they do it?
Yeah, that's been my experience as well. Speaking of actors, can you tell us a little bit about who exactly you have on your production?
We've been incredibly fortunate to run across this group of actors that we have. The show's host is a voice actor named Damon Krall, who doesn't just do voice acting, but it's what he's best known for. There's a running joke that he's that Clint Eastwood specifically writes parts in his films just for Damon.
Damon to do voiceover.
Because he's been in the last five or six of them, I think.
And he's been in several films.
In terms of film, he's probably best known for playing Dr. Caligari in The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Right.
The reimagining of it with Doug Jones. Besides Damon, we've got
Christopher Duba, Tucker Smallwood, Elizabeth Grayson.
Adrian Wilkinson.
Adrian, our goddess.
And Steve Sharknado.
Sharknado. Steve, he's awesome. He's a comedian as well. So recording with him. And then the new guys are terrific. We have two boys from Pennsylvania as well.
They're actually two guys from my hometown.
The Hackman brothers.
Actually, Steve's from Harrisburg, too.
Oh, my gosh. This is like turning into a family. But they're such pros. They can do any accent. And what's nice is we laugh so much. We have such a good time in the studio. We have a new girl, Catherine.
Catherine Kamei.
Catherine Kamei. I love her. She's fantastic.
And a fellow named Scott Henry, who is sort of a younger version of Damon in that he's best known for his voiceover work.
Rocky.
Rocky Cerda.
Rocky does it. He was actually I tried to make a music video on GarageBand of this song that I wrote, and I had to have a love interest in it, and I said, Rocky, I have some footage of you. May I use it? He's like, I don't care. He's so easygoing, but he does some interesting characters, and he's always really enthusiastic. I mean, he's just always on, and he's just a funny guy, too. And Kirshner, we have Kirshner. Because we have had a lot of guests, too. Like, we've had some...
Anyway, yeah.
Some work out, some don't. And we were sending inquiries out because I think it would be something that they might be interested in, especially people that started out in radio or, you know, we'll try anyone out.
We actually, in one of our future shows, might have an actor from the original Suspense. A fellow named Tommy Cook, who's into his 80s and still... very active and great for being in his 80s in great physical condition, and he's still active. So we're really looking forward to that because it sort of ties things together.
The old and the new, it's almost like she's giving us, we're getting a nod of approval, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so far, the comments, people have been...
We've been floored by the response we've gotten so far.
Yeah.
We're talking to the folks at Public Radio Exchange. Their comment was that there are two radio dramas that they deal with that are sort of standouts. It's us and LA Theater Works, which is institution. They've been around for a quarter century.
And to be
like name brand actors.
Same sentence with them is such a compliment and an honor. I mean, my gosh.
Yeah. It's
And hey, do you know Jeff Goldblum?
Yes, I do. I know Jeff Goldblum at least from his work.
Oh,
I don't know him personally.
In our show, I gotta put it out there.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you actually a little bit about the reception that your new radio drama has. When you went to take it around, like you had said before, what was the general response that people had to it?
When we had made the initial pilots of Suspense, which were Cool Air, the H.P. Lovecraft story, and Essence, which was an original.
Oh, yeah.
We did those in May of 2012, sort of put it out there. And at that point, we were just sort of feeling our way along, so we tried a bunch of NPR stations, which, as it turned out, is not the ideal route to go because... as has been explained to us by some NPR folks, they're a little bit behind the curve in terms of radio drama. But then in July of 2012, SiriusXM decided to pick up the show and sort of started to roll from there.
Until they changed it to rural radio.
Yeah.
So they no longer have book radio. They have Yeehaw, rural radio.
Yeah.
What the hell is that? Just so much more than that.
But, you know, it's worked out okay because over the past 4 months, we're up to 36 affiliate stations, and the number seems to grow by about two or three a week. We're very excited about something else that's coming up, which is our affiliation with Audible, audible.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's Amazon's audiobook arm, and while audiobooks are their sort of their bread and butter, they are very interested in expanding into radio or audio drama.
in Canada, on the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, we had an 87-year history of producing radio dramas, 87 consecutive years until last year when the entire program was cut. And one of the reasons that my program exists here on CITR is to try to fill in that huge vacuum that now exists above the 49th in terms of having the public be able to access audio and radio dramas the way that they had always been. And it's always really great to hear about people who are involved in that kind of work and still keeping it alive and viable. Do you have any plans for future projects?
We've got something in the works right now that's going to be specifically for Audible. They are interested in suspense and they're very excited about it, but their real interest lies in having us do an original series just for them. And so we're bouncing around ideas for that right now. We can't say too much about it at the moment, but yes, and we plan on making a lot more suspense episodes, so that will keep us busy for quite a while, I think.
We have some comedy things coming up, and we do little clips all the time. It's just, you know, I wish there were 48 hours to a day. You know, I sometimes go two nights without sleep if I'm on a writing, you know, jag. It's like, there's no way. I mean, the characters come to life for me, and I'll type, I write, and I walk around the apartment drinking coffee, you know?
Yes, I do. I've been there. Given your experience that you have now in producing audio radio dramas, do you have any advice for groups of people that are thinking about doing something similar?
Go for it.
Yeah.
Just absolutely go for it and work with people. Choose people that you feel comfortable with, though, because you have to have a chemistry, because so much of it is imagination, and you can only direct so much. The person has to feel the script. And if you don't click with them, they're not going to be able to click with what the words that you've written, that you want it to trigger something magical that happens when someone listens. So I'd say just find people that you have a chemistry with, that make you laugh, that it's enjoyable, and just go for it. And you learn as you go. I mean, my gosh. I mean, life is... We should always keep learning and trying new things, no matter what age we are. I would encourage anyone to follow their dream, because, you're going to have setbacks. And, it can be disappointing, but keep a sense of humor and just go for it. Because it's a blast. This journey is a blast. Like, the end result, I don't care. You know, life is good right now.
And in terms of what resources they may have, when they go to select actors for the project, the chemistry is very important.
Yeah.
They might, we've worked with, or we know of actors who are very good film or TV actors, but it doesn't necessarily translate to
the
radio.
Yeah.
In fact, stage actors have turned out to be very good because they're used to having to do more with their voices.
Oh, like Christopher Duba is amazing.
Oh,
boy.
Gosh, yes.
We're really lucky. This kid is on, what are you at, HBO or some kind of Comedy Central? He has all kinds of stuff. Remember this name, because he's going to be a big star. Christopher Duba. He's hysterically funny, terribly talented, so much so that I get nervous. Because sometimes I try to do acting if we need it. I'll get so nervous my knees knock. You know, and I'm afraid he can hear it, because he's just so good. He can play any accent, any character. So I need confidence. Tell him to have confidence, too.
It's interesting you would say that. Are you familiar with a voiceover actor named Rob Paulsen?
The name sounds sort of familiar,
he was Pinky in Pinky in the Brain. He was Yakko Warner on Animaniacs.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Oh, I know the voice.
Yeah, he runs a podcast called Talkin' Tunes, and actually he mentions very often something that you had just brought up, the fact that a lot of voiceover people, they come from performance backgrounds, but a lot of them don't come from in front of the camera performance backgrounds.
Okay.
Rob was a punk rock musician. A lot of them are stand-up comics or theater performers, as you had just said, and that's where a lot of voiceover talent comes from. Do you have any final parting thoughts that you would like to share with us?
Gosh, I wish I had something really sage or something really, really funny. But no, I mean, this has just been so nice. We just really appreciate. I appreciate the opportunity just to chat with somebody else that's interested in the same thing we are, and I can't wait to go to your station and check it out. I mean,
yeah, I agree with that, and I'm.
Maybe we collaborate sometime and write a story together. Who knows? Because it seems like the younger kids are really catching on to it, too. I mean, they're putting down their iPods and they're turning off the TV. And, you know, I live in a building where there are a lot of young people. And I will give kids some CDs and say, just tell me what you think of this. A couple weeks later, one of the kids will come back and say, they were floored. They loved it. They sat down. They listened to it. It was, wow, what an experience. They weren't stimulated visually. They weren't, I mean, it's just them. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest compliment.
Well, thank you very much for the both of you for being on our show today.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Brad.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense. There are certain things that are just archetypically American, like apple pie, baseball, rock and roll. One such piece of Americana is the cook-off, or cooking contest. There isn't a state fair or a holiday celebration anywhere in the country that doesn't have some sort of food-related competition as a centerpiece of the festivities. The focus of each cook-off may vary. Entrees, meats, chili, desserts, baked goods, soups. And so may the stakes, from the $1 million prize awarded in the annual Pillsbury Bake Off to the blue ribbons handed out in thousands of small towns. But one constant amidst those variables is the fierceness of the competition among normally mild-mannered women and men, and the lengths to which some contestants will go to assure victory may indeed be difficult to swallow.
Good afternoon. Can I help you, ladies?
Hello. I'm Ethel McRory.
And I'm Doris Jean Fowler.
We're the official, unofficial welcoming committee, and we just wanted to stop by and say, Welcome to Poseyville.
Oh, why, isn't that nice? Very glad to make your acquaintance, ladies. I'm Pepper Madison.
Good to meet you, Mrs. Madison. It is Mrs. Madison, isn't it?
But of course. And what's that you have there, Mrs. McRory?
Oh, just a welcome basket for you, filled with some of our simple fare. Breads, preserves, a mincemeat pie. All homemade, of course.
Well, my heavens! It looks simply scrumptious. All homemade, you say?
Yeah. Ethel here is quite the cook. In fact, she's won the blue ribbon in the Poseyville 4th of July cook-off 3 years running.
Why, that's just a few days away. Mrs. McGrory, you must feel very confident about your chances.
Well, I don't know. Doris Jean here makes quite the shepherd's pie.
Oh, horse feathers. Ethel's the best cook in the whole county. Nope. I'm more comfortable in the garden than in the kitchen. Why, almost all the ingredients for Ethel's entry are coming right out of my garden. Let's see. There's basil, rosemary, turnips.
Doris Jean, you're giving away my recipe.
Won't you ladies come in and have a cool glass of lemonade? This weather is just so hot.
It's the humidity.
Oh, we wouldn't dream of bothering you while you're getting settled in.
Well, why don't y'all come back tomorrow for a nice little luncheon? I'd love the chance to cook for my new neighbors and learn all the rich history of Poseyville.
We'd be delighted.
Yes. We'd be delighted. How nice of you to ask.
Fine. Shall we say tomorrow at 12?
It's a date. Can we bring anything?
Oh, that's quite all right. I have everything I need right here. Especially now that you and Mrs. McGrory have given me this lovely basket.
Wonderful. See you then, Mrs. Madison.
Until then, ladies.
Ethel, what's the matter with you? You were so short with Mrs. Madison, and she seems so nice.
Oh, I know, but did you have to accept that lunch invitation?
Well, why not?
Did you see her hands? Perfectly manicured. I swear I could still smell the red nail lacquer. She probably can't even boil water. Now we have to have luncheon. She'll probably serve us Swanson TV dinners off the top of a packing crate.
Speaking of which, did you get a load of the high heels?
Oh.
And pearls, no less. Do you think she's unpacking boxes like that?
Yeah, and she probably vacuums in high heels, too.
Oh, just like June Cleaver.
Okay, so we'll grin and bear it. Just make sure to eat a hearty breakfast before we go over.
Right. See you in the morning, Ethel. Ethel, you're supposed to dab a little of that toilet water behind your ears, not bathe in it.
Oh, and you're one to talk. I haven't seen you wearing that much cheek rouge since our junior prom.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a lady getting herself a little done up every now and then.
A little? Why, Doris Jean, are those the pearl earrings Walt got you for your 30th anniversary? The only time I've seen you wear those is when the governor visited Poseyville in 53.
Oops, it's 12 o'clock on the button. We should get going. We wouldn't want to be late after all.
Are you that excited to have frozen Salisbury steak and peas?
Let's just hope she knows how to turn the oven on. Otherwise, we really will be eating frozen TV dinners.
Well, we shouldn't keep our Southern Belle waiting.
Welcome, Mrs. Fowler. Mrs. McGrory. How are you both?
Oh, just fine, Mrs. Madison.
Yes, we were just discussing how much we were looking forward to this luncheon.
Well, it is my pleasure to be able to host you both. Please come in and make yourselves at home. I just need to check the oven.
Checking the oven. Hopefully that means she figured out how to turn it on.
Oh, hush, Ethel. We need to... Would you look at this place, Ethel?
I'm looking.
She just moved in.
And she's already unpacked and organized.
Why, this house is spotless. And you know how long it was sitting empty after Mr. Kavanaugh, God bless his soul, passed on.
Oh, well, that's just the downstairs. She probably just piled everything upstairs so we wouldn't see.
I suppose you're right. After all, it's not like she's some Wonder Woman.
Ladies, luncheon is served.
Try not to choke on the frozen peas.
We have Waldorf salad and shrimp cocktails to get us started. Now, I'll be right out with the main course.
What a spread.
Oh, anyone can make a salad.
And look at the place settings.
She probably just saw it in Better Homes and Gardens. It certainly doesn't mean she can cook.
And here's our main course.
Oh, it smells delicious. What is it, Mrs. Madison?
Oh, it's just an old family recipe. Steak and kidney pudding.
The crust is so perfectly flaky.
Oh, I'm afraid it's nowhere near as good as my mama's. Still, I don't think we'll perish from hunger.
Frozen Salisbury steak, huh?
Let's just see how it tastes before making any judgments, shall we, Doris Jean? The proof is in the pudding, after all. Right now, though, Dad.
Out on another stroll through Songland, huh? I do hope the luncheon was to your liking, ladies.
Mrs. Madison, the steak and kidney pudding was amazing. I can't believe we ate the whole thing. Whatever is your secret?
Oh, it's the meat. If you start with a young and very tender cut, you can't go wrong.
Well, I can honestly say that that was the best meal I've had in ages. Wasn't it, Ethel?
It was wonderful, Mrs. Madison.
Oh, well, thank you kindly. It was the very least I could do for my new neighbors, especially when you went to all that bother to wear your Sunday finest.
Do you like Doris Jean's dress? She made it herself.
Oh, Ethel.
Doris Jean is the best seamstress in Poseyville. Why, she sews all the costumes for the grammar school Christmas pageant.
Oh, it's lovely. Now, that's the Butterick 6015 pattern, isn't it? That's the walkaway dress, right?
Why, yes, it is, Mrs. Madison. Do you sew as well?
No, just a bit. And you did such a neat job on those seams, Mrs. Fowler. I can see why the children must love your work.
Did you make that dress you're wearing, Mrs. Madison?
This? Yes.
Really? I don't recognize the pattern. Is it McCall's?
Oh, no, it's just a little something I whipped up myself.
A little something? Why, it's exquisite. Don't you think so, Doris Jean?
Oh, yes, it's beautiful, Mrs. Madison. You should be proud of your handiwork.
Why, thank you, ladies.
In fact, Doris Jean here had better look out. This Christmas, it might be you making the children's costumes.
Oh, now that's silly. They already have a fine seamstress in Mrs. Fowler.
I'm terribly sorry, but I just remembered an errand that I must run before 2 o'clock. Will you please excuse me, Mrs. Madison?
Yes, I should be going as well.
Oh, well, but of course, ladies. But thanks for coming. You're both welcome anytime.
And thank you, Mrs. Madison. We both had a delightful time.
Yes, thank you.
Mrs. Madison, you don't have any children, do you?
No, not yet. Why do you ask, Mrs. McGrory?
Because of that boy's baseball cap hanging next to the door.
Yeah, it's a cap for the Lowry's Market team.
Oh, that. Well, I hired a young boy to help me move a few items around the house, and he forgot his ball cap when he left. He'll be back for it presently, I suppose.
But of course. Well, thank you again.
Yes. Thank you, Mrs. Madison.
My pleasure. Please come back soon.
Physicians and surgeons, Dr. Charles Mayo once said...
Land sake, Ethel. Sneaking in like that? It's enough to give a body a heart attack. Did you see this morning's paper? No. After our lunch with Mrs. Madison yesterday, I decided to make a new dress from scratch. I'm working on it ever since.
How's it coming along?
So what were you saying about the morning paper?
To help you do this
read this.
The House of Squibb has created a safe, effective tooth powder.
4th of July sale at the Broadway. Half off on ladies' dresses. Oh, that's a low blow, Ethel.
Not that, Doris Jean. The article below it.
Search underway for missing Poseyville boy. Teddy Norton, age 10.
Look at the photo.
Maybe. Nope, doesn't ring a bell. Oh, is he Verna Norton's boy?
His cap! Look at his ball cap! No more.
Why, he's wearing the Lowry's Market ball cap.
Same as the one that was hanging by Mrs. Madison's door.
Ethel, I still don't see what you're getting at.
Don't you remember how nervous she got when we asked about the cap? And you know how those kids are about their team uniforms. A boy wouldn't just forget his prized team ball cap.
You've never had a boy around the house, have you?
Just what's that supposed to mean?
It means that boys lose things all the time, including ball caps.
So you don't think that Mrs. Madison had something to do with Teddy Norton's disappearance?
What? Oh, Ethel, that's ridiculous. What would Mrs. Madison want with a little boy?
Well...
What's she gonna do with Teddy? Cook him up in a pie like Hansel and Gretel?
Okay. Maybe I'm...
Oh, hold that thought, Ethel. Hello? Oh, hi, Norma. Yes, she's right here. I'll put her on. It's for you.
Hi, Norma. What can I do for you? What's that? She is? She what? Norma, I have to go. Thanks for calling.
What was that all about?
Norma wanted to let me know that our new neighbor, Mrs. Madison, just signed up for the cook-off.
Oh, afraid of a little competition, are we?
That's not it at all. But do you know what she's making?
No. What?
Something she calls kid stew.
What?
That's right. Kid stew.
Oh, Ethel. That's just... I mean, the very idea...
We don't have a minute to spare. We have to go to Mrs. Madison's right now.
But I'm not even dressed.
Doris Jean!
I am not going out looking like this. Give me 15 minutes to get these rollers out of my hair and slap on some more paint.
Look, we... Fine. Meet me out front in 15 minutes. You're bringing her flowers?
Well, we needed some excuse to stop by, so I thought bringing a thank you bouquet would do the trick. Unless you have a better idea.
All right, let's just do this. Now remember, keep an eye out for anything suspicious.
Good morning, ladies. Well, my, what a lovely bunch of flowers.
Yes, we wanted to drop by and thank you for the wonderful luncheon yesterday. We were so...
Oh, I do thank you, ladies. It's ever so kind of you. But I'm afraid I can't talk right now. I've decided to enter the cook-off, and the dish I'm making requires my undivided attention.
But we...
I'll see you both tomorrow. Now, thanks again for the bouquet.
Did you see what I saw?
How could I miss it? That stain on her apron, it looked like...
Blood.
Ladies and gentlemen, this year's Poseyville 4th of July cook-off has been the best yet, and we have just two entries remaining. First up, the Blue Ribbon winner for 3 years running, Mrs. Ethel McGrory. This year, Mrs. McGrory has gone with an exotic taste all the way from India. Roast chicken with apple chutney. And now the judges and myself will sample Mrs. McGrory's dish.
So how do you like your chances, Ethel?
Oh, Doris Jean. How can you even think of some silly contest at a time like this? That poor little Norton boy. I tell you, Doris Jean, it just breaks my heart.
But did you see the look on the mayor's face when he chiseled off a slab of Violet Abercrombie's Yankee pot roast? This should be my easiest win yet.
Ooh, they're about to take a bite.
Oh, I can't look. Doris Jean, tell me what they think.
Well, ooh, I think the chutney might be a little too spicy for old man Barber.
Oh, no.
But the other judges seem to like it, especially the mayor. He's nodding his head and smiling like a cat who swallowed the canary.
Really?
Look for yourself if you don't believe me.
Doris Jean, I just couldn't.
Oh, for Pete's sake, just look.
Well, they do seem to be enjoying it. Like I said, this should be my easiest win yet.
But there's still Mrs. Madison's entry.
Doris Jean, I am surprised at you. Are you forgetting what's in that kid's stew of hers? One bite and the mayor will be running for the lavatory.
Oh, Ethel, shouldn't we tell them?
Tell them what? We don't have any evidence to show them. Besides, I want to see that show-off get her comeuppance in front of the whole town. Don't you?
Well...
Did you hear? Gladys tells me Mrs. Madison also designed the dress she's wearing right now.
It's time.
And now, a late entry by the newest resident of our happy little town, Mrs. Pepper Madison. Mrs. Madison's dish is an old favorite of hers called Kid Stew.
Oh, I can't watch.
Then why are you looking right at them?
Get ready, Doris Jean. What's going on?
If I didn't know better, I'd swear they love it.
But that's not possible.
Well, possible or not, that is what's happening. Oh, my word. Is the mayor asking for seconds?
We need to find a policeman right now.
But you said we couldn't go to the police because we didn't have any evidence.
Doris Jean, we have to get justice for little Teddy.
And this has nothing to do with the fact that Mrs. Madison is about to win the cook-off?
Come on!
Oh, all right.
Tick-tock, tick-tock, hickory-dickory-dock, ooh, it's time to beat the clock. Time for fun has now begun, let's all play beat the clock.
Hurry! Officers, hurry!
Look, Mrs.
McGrory! Ethel McGrory! Surely you know who I am. I'm the winner of the annual cook-off.
You were the winner of the annual cook-off.
Officers, we believe a murder has been committed.
A murder? Here in Poseyville. Who's the victim?
That little missing boy. Teddy Norton.
The Norton kid? His parents say he's run away before. He'll come back in a day or two.
Oh, no, he won't. Because Mrs. Pepper Madison killed him.
What? What proof do you have?
The proof is in that pot of so-called kid stew sitting right next to the judging stand.
Kid stew? Mrs. McGrory, have you been hitting the sauce?
Why, I never.
Why, there was that time. Like...
There she is! Mrs. Madison! Arrest her!
Officer Ferretti, what's the meaning of this?
Sorry, Mayor, but this lady says that Mrs. Madison here killed a little boy.
And then cooked him up in that kid stew you're eating.
Mrs. McGrory, are you insane?
Wait a second. That smell. I know that smell.
Don't eat that!
Holy moly! I haven't had this since I was a kid. Back in Italy before the war, my grandmother would make this for me.
Your grandmother cooked people?
What? No. This kid stew, it's made from young goat. You know, a kid.
What?
If you two ladies are quite finished, the winner of this year's Poseyville 4th of July cook-off is Mrs. Pepper Madison.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Well, I'll be.
Actually, you ladies were half right. Only it wasn't the kid stew that had the secret ingredient. The steak and kidney pudding I made you for lunch. Now aren't you glad you had seconds?
So ends Proof in the Pudding by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions. Tonight's drama was written especially for Suspense by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Adrian Wilkinson was Pepper Madison. Christina Joy Howard was Ethel McGrory. Dana Perry Hayes was Doris Jean Fowler. Johnny Francis Wolfe was the mayor, Rocky Cerda was Officer Ferretti, and Eric Kelly was Officer Hughes. I'm Damon Crawl. Next week at this time, tune in for another study in Suspense.
You are tuned in to CITR. You are tuned into CITR 101.9 FM, and that is just about all of the time we have here for Skald's Hall. Just a very quick reminder, because of the various live events that CITR 101.9 FM will be covering throughout Vancouver, especially here on campus, for the introduction of the new school year, our show on Friday, September 6th and Friday, September 13th have been preempted. Skald's Hall will return on Friday, September the 20th. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend, and that's all for us. Oh, and coming up next, Tyler and Cam with Radio Zero.
It's only a dream. Power Cord, every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m.